A lot of times when we have these classes, I reflect on what we've been talking about lately. Not we on this class, but just myself in my travels. And maybe I'll begin by reflecting on a few things that have happened, kind of interesting misunderstandings that that come to me, and I always seem to be concerned about them. So it seems that people hear things either incorrectly or out of context or in isolation. Like perhaps there's a text that says something but is very specific to a time, place, and circumstance which is different from the time, place, and circumstance we're in. So one devotee wrote me about chanting Hare Krishna and initiation, and there's this idea that he presented to me that if you're not initiated, then if you chant Hare Krishna, you will go to hell. He said that, he heard that. I don't know where he heard it from. He didn't give me a reference. So I assume it's a misunderstanding. That perhaps if you chant Hare Krishna with the desire to become Krishna, then we could say, okay, yeah, then you go to Brahman, which is also hell for devotees. But of course, Prabhupada gave the holy name to everyone. And because Prabhupada gave it, it's coming from him, and therefore it's bona fide. So maybe in that sense they meant if you don't get it from a proper source, then it's milk touched by the lips of a snake, it becomes poisonous. So, you know, somehow or other, that filtered down to, if you're not initiated, then when you chant Hare Krishna, you'll go to hell. And quoting or saying that he understood that Jiva Goswami had said that. What Jiva Goswami has said is that you don't have to be initiated to chant Hare Krishna. You have to be initiated to chant the Gayatri Mantra. But you don't have to be initiated to chant Hare Krishna. Obviously, you don't have to be initiated because Prabhupada gave it to everyone freely and told us to distribute it freely. And then by chanting, one would be elevated. So that's the nature of the holy name, is that anybody can chant it. But the nature of the Gayatri mantras or other mantras, Pancharatriki mantras, is that you have to be twice born Brahman to chant them. And so that's the value of the Hare Krishna mantras, is that anybody can get it. And that was Mahaprabhu's mood, to give it to anyone. And of course, the source that you get it from should be pure. That's the idea. That if you're getting it from a Mayavadi or a Sahaji or someone not connected with a bona fide disciplic succession, then the mantra won't have power. So that's okay. We understand that. But to say that by chanting you will go to hell is pretty antithetical to the whole idea of Mahaprabhu's movement and widely distributing the holy name, which is it's just interesting that one would say that, or one has heard that, or one has thought that they've heard that, when it doesn't align with the mood of Mahaprabhu. And if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's all about giving the holy name to everyone, even those who don't want it, somehow or other getting them to be Krishna conscious. Right? So, what do you think of that? You chant Hare Krishna without initiation, you go to hell, but you have to wait at least 6 months to get initiated. So then your guru will have to go down to hell to get you. Well, better you don't chant Hare Krishna, but then if you don't, you won't be able to get a guru because you have to chant for 6 months. But if you chant for 6 months, you'll go to hell. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, does it? And many spiritual masters will not initiate disciples for many, many years. So how could that make sense? Okay. That's one misunderstanding. Okay. This is just for my, you know, dealings with devotees. Second misunderstanding that has been coming up quite often, not always on my travels, but in general, is this one, that if someone accepts someone as their spiritual master or wants to take initiation, or they think that this is the person I'd like to take initiation from, and later they meet another spiritual master who inspires them in a way which makes them realize that they would prefer, or there's something, I can't, I never had this experience because we only have Srila Prabhupada, so it's, I can only articulate it from the observation perspective, but they get especially inspired by some, that person touches their heart in a special way, more deeply than the spiritual master they were aspiring for, or they see they have more in common. Something happens, and they can't get that spiritual master out of their heart and mind, and they feel more connection. Something like that. And then at some point, you know, it's confusing, because naturally there'll be some feeling that, well, am I being offensive to my spiritual master by thinking that although I'm aspiring to take initiation, that someone else has come who's inspiring me more? Is that wrong? And it's not wrong. I mean, in some cases, it could be whimsical, and it could be that every 6 months someone else comes along, or it could be that you've made a decision foolishly, you don't know what you're doing. That could be there, but assuming that's not there, assuming this is, you know, it's well felt, thought out, and planned, then what is recommended in our Shastra, and also there's a resolution to this effect, is that one approaches the spiritual master one was aspiring to accept diksha from and ask for his blessings to take shelter of another spiritual master. And generally, one would still keep that spiritual master as their siksha guru, because they're connected and inspired in their learning. So by accepting someone else now to aspire for as diksha guru, it doesn't mean you reject someone as siksha guru. But what one devotee was told, and this came up yesterday, is that she wanted to do that with me. Prem Kishore said, doesn't it go against the idea of the Maha Mantra? You have to wait until you're initiated to go against Mahaprabhu's mission? Yes, it does. That's the whole point. It does. So why would anyone say it? Doesn't it go against the mantra project? Yes. The Maha Mantra is for everyone. So back to this initiation issue. So one devotee was told yesterday that it's an aparad. She just made an aparad to her guru by wanting to accept someone else as their guru. And this had become such a misunderstanding and such a problem that the GBC actually had to pass a resolution that anytime one wants to make this decision, no one should interfere with it. And the spiritual master for which the disciple was aspiring should unhesitatingly grant his blessings for them to take shelter of another guru. From the perspective of the disciple, as I was saying, the disciple should not think, if I find another spiritual master, the former spiritual master that I was aspiring for has no relevance. And no, one can have many siksha gurus. So one should, it's not one or the other. One shouldn't think that way. I think we've probably spoken about this before, but it just came up again. And then another thing that came up was one newly accepted disciple, or one who wanted to be my disciple, was wanting to serve and asking me if they could serve. And some devotee thought that was improper and a disturbance. And the point is that in an individual accepting a guru and wanting to serve a guru, or making a decision that perhaps the guru they were aspiring for is was not really the one they want to take initiation from, or even after initiation, finding another siksha guru that inspires them in special ways, who they also want to take shelter of. In those situations, in general, it is not the business of any other person to stand in the way of that relationship and say, this is not right. If they have, if they've asked for the blessings of their spiritual master, or even no one should stand in the way and say, you shouldn't do this, which would mean that they wouldn't even ask for the blessings. Nobody should think that this is wrong, and nobody should get in the way of a person's individual decision as to who they want to accept as guru. So then here, another problem. I think we've discussed a lot of this before, but it's just on my mind now, so I kind of felt that maybe we've discussed the guru tattva issue fairly well, and I was thinking of perhaps going on to another topic, although haven't considered what the next topic would be yet. But so these ideas are on my mind right now, so I wanted to discuss them. So one of the situations that we're dealing with in many places in the world, and GBC, and many devotees have tried to deal with this problem, is the problem of people accepting a guru under pressure. And there's two kinds of pressure. One is a general pressure to be initiated by anybody, no one specifically. And say, you know, you've been chanting for 3 years, when are you going to get initiated? That's one pressure. And the second pressure, which can be subtle and often not even noticed to the prospective disciple, is to get initiated by a specific person. So let's just talk about the first one. Recently I talked about the first one. I think it was I was just in Navi Mumbai. I believe I spoke about it there. And what I was saying is that often when you make a vow, it can put tremendous amount of pressure on you if your lifestyle is very, very busy or very unstable. In other words, you don't know from year to year where you're going to be working, where you're going to be living, what you're going to be doing. Or it could be service also. You have tremendous amounts of service. Or you're internally, well, it can be very stressful to commit if you're not an entirely committed person, if that's not your nature or your type or your style. So in our movement, generally when someone has been around a while, usually there's going to be some pressure that, well, when are you going to take initiation? Or if not that, who are you planning to take initiation from? So the point is that no one should be forced or made to feel any kind of pressure to take initiation in general. That's point number one. And that this has always been a problem. And I guess some people would probably even argue and say, better they take initiation, even if they can't follow, Because the idea is, well, you know, who knows when you're going to die? And if you die and you're not initiated, then who knows where you're going to go? It's not exactly like that. But, you know, in many people's minds, it is like that. It's like black and white. You know, Prabhu, you've been chanting for 5 years and you're not initiated. What happens if you die? You get in a car accident and you don't have, and you're not initiated. So there's a story I told before about a devotee who was very dear to Prabhupada, who helped Prabhupada secure the Juhu temple, the property, and help Prabhupada build it. And devotees were encouraging him to take initiation. And for some reason, he didn't feel ready. I mean, you don't know individually why one would feel ready and why one wouldn't feel ready. But anyway, he didn't feel ready. And devotees didn't really respect that, and they encouraged him to get initiation. I guess a lot of devotees were encouraging him to get initiated, and he went to Prabhupada. And he was very dear to Prabhupada. He went to Prabhupada. And and told Prabhupada that, you know, these devotees are pressuring me to get initiated. I guess the unstated statement was that I don't want to, or I don't feel ready, or I don't feel qualified. You know, he may be have been an extremely humble person, perhaps just didn't feel qualified, or who knows? Maybe he was drinking tea, or you don't know. And Prabhupada said that something to the effect that, you know, don't worry about them, that I'll take you back to Godhead. And I think he also said something, you know, you are my disciple anyway. And then he told them something really nice, because he was building the Juhu project, and I think he must have also been building additions to existing flats, and or at least refurbishing them. And he said, as you are building these buildings for devotees, here Krishna is making your house in Vaikuntha. So basically, Prabhupada was saying that, you know, you go back to Godhead. You're connected with me. There was another conversation which a devotee said, Prabhupada, people are getting your books all over the world, so how can they take initiation? There's no temples and this and that. He said, the initiation is reading my book. So Prabhupada was making the point that the connection was through hearing from him. So that's the real connection, guru and disciple. And I think in that statement, and the statement that Prabhupada made to this man, Mr. Sethi, he's saying the real connection is that you're hearing. The real connection is that you've accepted me as your teacher. In other words, you've accepted me as your guru. And that's what's most important. So it Shastra does say you should take initiation, but in so many other ways, from these anecdotes and other statements in Shastra, we see that if you really focus on the essence, then you get the essence. If you focus on the formality, you could miss the essence and only get the formality. So you have formal initiation. Okay, that's all right. But what's your connection with your spiritual master? Right? You're the connection of someone who's not formally initiated could be deeper. So I think it's important to understand that you know, that nobody should be forced. Because when they're forced, they're formally now making a commitment. And they have to be ready for that commitment. In other words, let's say I've been following my spiritual master for years, but I'm not initiated. And I've followed the four principles and chanted 16 rounds. But I want to wait to make sure that I can actually do it, that I'm ready, that I could commit my whole life. But aside from that, I'm committed fully. I've committed in my heart. I know this is the person that I will guide me back to Krishna. I have full faith in that person. So, for all intents and purposes, the initiation has already taken place. But the person wants to make sure that they're ready. So when I commit, I want to make sure I can commit 100%. So we have to respect that, and we have to, in a sense, accept that as good as initiation, or in a sense, maybe even better. Because the essence has been there. And then you look at the example of Prabhupada, and you think, why did Prabhupada wait 11 years to take initiation? I don't know specifically. I could guess for a few reasons. One, you could say, is he didn't feel it was necessary. He didn't feel qualified. He didn't feel it was going to be. He felt perhaps it would be disruptive for his family if officially he did it. Maybe they weren't so supportive of his connection with the Gaudiya Mutt. I mean, I don't know, as I've never heard Prabhupada say. There could be many, and it could be all those reasons. Perhaps Prabhupada, I mean, Prabhupada said, I accepted him in my heart as my spiritual master. Then, of course, Prabhupada said, you know, someone said, can you accept a spiritual master in your heart? And Prabhupada understood it in that context to mean sentimental. You know, oh, he's my guru, but I don't follow him. So Prabhupada said, no, you can't. You have to be initiated. So that would appear to contradict what I'm saying now. But what Prabhupada meant by that is that you can't say, I accept him in my heart, but I don't follow him. So if you ever come across that statement, then you understand what it means. So why Prabhupada is saying, no, you have to actually take initiation. So if I've, in my heart, accepted someone as my spiritual master, and I've accepted to follow their instructions, which includes 16 rounds, 4 vegetative principles, then, in one sense, you could say you are already initiated and the connection is already there. Let's take this from the point of view of becoming a Siksha disciple of someone. And you might say, I'm only a Siksha disciple, I'm not a Diksha disciple, and a Diksha disciple would be better. But the same principle applies, that if you've accepted that person as your guru, you've accepted them in your heart, you're being guided by them, then it's not because of a formal ceremony that it makes it different or better. I think in our movement, we think that way. So let's use it, we could compare it to a wedding. That, you know, my parents arranged a marriage, but there's another girl I love more. But I can't marry her, so I marry this other girl. So formally, we did the wedding, but I actually love the other girl more. So the formality in and of itself can't create the relationship. As I said in an earlier class, the idea of formality is you're formalizing something that exists. You're formalizing your dedication. You're formalizing your relationship. So if you don't have the relationship deeply as guru and disciple, then you're only formalizing what you have. And you may be formalizing something that's very shallow or very weak, where someone may feel not ready to formalize it, but what they already have is much, much deeper than what someone else formalized. You understand? I think this makes sense. Now, of course, you could go to Shastra and say, but Shastra says, you know, five most important items in devotional service, accepting a guru, accepting the shelter, following him, following in his footsteps, etc., etc. And then one of them is taking initiation. So I think we should, if we see initiation as not the most important thing, but the relationship as the most important thing, whether it be with an aspiring Diksha Guru or with a Siksha Guru, if you've already initiated, or you may be aspiring for one, but you have another that you're also very close with and you feel great affection for, then we understand what is the essence of the relationship. And we have the example that I mentioned earlier of Prabhupada, who's saying, I accepted him as my guru from the first meeting in my heart. And I guess you could say, of course, we're speculating a little bit, that Prabhupada didn't feel the necessity of formalizing that because it was already so deep within him. And maybe you could say that some people who want to formalize it, who are like really pushing, when am I going to get initiated, when am I going to... Which is not wrong, but it can be wrong if they think it becomes something after you accept initiation. If they think that way, it's wrong. And I think a lot of people do think that way. They think, well, I need to get the diksha, and at the time of diksha, then everything changes. Now, it might change because it's a psychologically, it's a samskar. It's like, okay, we're officially guru and disciple, so now I have to be serious. So it may, in that sense, make one more serious, which vows are meant to do. But it may not necessarily do that, or it may only do that temporarily. So one who has real relationship has a real relationship, whether or not it's formalized by diksha today or tomorrow. It should be formalized at some point. But my original point that I was making is that we should not put pressure on people. We could ask them, you know, when are you thinking of formalizing, you know, taking diksha? We can ask them, and if they say, well, I don't think I'm ready yet, or maybe not for 5 years or whatever, then we shouldn't force them. It's not our position in general to do that. I mean, maybe if the person's ill, they might die. You might say, well, I think, you know, you're getting older, you're not so healthy, it would be wise to do it now. You might, but it's not something that in general, would force somebody to do, but it's a decision that they need to make on their own. And we need to help devotees understand what diksha is so that they don't choose a guru just because everyone else is choosing that guru, or the guru does nice kirtan, or some external reason, because it has to be based on a connection, a relationship. Now, sometimes people, they accept initiation, and later on, the relationship between themselves and their guru slackens, because perhaps they felt that the diksha was going to make the relationship stronger, and it wasn't stronger before diksha. And if it's not stronger before diksha, not necessarily will it get stronger after diksha. It could, like I say, as a psychological device, but as a practical device, not necessarily should we think that just because you go through that formality, things are going to change a lot. Because ultimately, it's the disciple that has to do it. It's not like a ceremony that's going to do it. You know, the ceremonies are, you know, inspirations, or they put you on the path. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he said, when you're initiated, you're officially become a neophyte. And he said the same thing. He said, don't think the initiation is really going to push you, but it's your own effort that's going to push you. And we always have to think that way, that it's not some formality or situation. Even like you can come here to Mayapur and get extremely fired up. You will come, if you come to Mayapur, you will get very fired up and very purified. But it doesn't mean that after you leave Mayapur, you're on automatic pilot for the rest of your life. You always have to take what you've been given and then apply that on a daily basis. And I think sometimes devotees, maybe subtly, think otherwise. They think, well, you know, coming to Mayapur or Vrindavan will surcharge my batteries, and I can kind of lay back and just get pushed by the Vaikuntha breezes. That may be true to some degree, but always effort is there. And so, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, I don't have the exact quote here, perhaps I've read it before, but it's really nice. And he makes this very clear, and he's saying, don't think that by getting initiated that now all the magic has happened and everything is just going to fall into place, and you really don't have to make much of an effort. But he made it clear that when you get initiated, it's just the beginning, and your effort is necessary. And the initiation, it was like a push. It's like, you know, you're a kid, we put the training wheels on your bike, and we're teaching you how to ride, and we give you a push. So now you're going like 5 miles an hour. It's easier to pedal and get going. But you have to continue to pedal. So unfortunately, I don't remember exactly what he said, but the impression I got was something like that. Like, it's just, like initiation is like this push. You know, you become absolved of sinful reactions. You officially are accepted into the siblic succession, formally accepted by your guru. You formally made your vows. Everything is formalized, and this is the impetus. It's a big impetus. But still, the point I'm making is it's all based on the relationship. That's what's most important. And then you say, okay, it's based on the relationship. So what does that mean, the relationship? Well, the relationship, it means that a disciple, if it's based on, if the main thing is the relationship as one being instructed, then the main relationship is the instructions that one gets from the spiritual master. And those instructions become the guidelines by which one conducts their life. That's what it means to be a disciple. Just like Prabhupada quotes Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur, Vyavasatmika Buddhi, in Bhagavad Gita, unfaltering, unwavering intelligence and determination, in saying that the words of the guru are one's life and soul. That's that your life, pranadana. Pranadana means life and soul. That's, my life is guided. My decisions are guided by those instructions. My activities are guided by those instructions. My sadhana is guided by those. Everything is guided by the instructions of the guru. That's what it means to be a disciple. And that's what it means to be connected. So you could take initiation and disconnect from those instructions. Well, I don't really agree, and he said this and that, but I can't really follow it. So then if you think that way, then you get disconnected. And so even you're formally initiated, it doesn't mean you become closer or connected. The person who's not initiated, who feels those instructions are their life and soul, they're much more connected than you are. So that's why, when people are looking at initiation, we want to help them understand what it is, what the essence is. It's that connection. It's the relationship, and I just want to serve this person. I'm inspired by them, and I'm inspired by their instructions, because by applying their instructions, I'm advancing, and I'm realizing the value of those instructions, and I'm inspired by their mission, and I want to serve their mission. Just like as disciples of Prabhupada, when he left, he gave us the movement, and he said, if you can't expand it, at least maintain it. So we were so inspired by Prabhupada's movement that we maintained it. We tried to expand it, but at least we maintained it, because this is our spiritual master's movement. So that's what it means to be a disciple, that here's his mission. And all of us are disciples of Prabhupada, and so we're all maintaining his mission, and that's the service we do to our guru, to serve Prabhupada and his mission. So, you understand? Is everybody clear on this? Because it's quite important, I think. In anything you do, you don't want to do it haphazardly, and you always want to understand what it is you're doing, what is the essence. Just like we had so many workshops on marriage, and it was all about to understand, well, what is marriage, what is it actually? I mean, why are you doing this? Right? Because if you do it for the wrong reason, and then later on you find out that marriage is not about what you thought it was, then you say, oh, I thought it was about that. I don't really want to be married, because I guess I misunderstood what marriage is about. So it's the same, marriage is about becoming Krishna conscious. Marriage is about serving your spouse. Marriage is not about romance and sex. I mean, that may be part of it, but that's not the essence of it. The essence is service, spiritual advancement. That's why you do it. We don't do anything unless it's helpful for our Krishna consciousness. So many times in marriage, people get married not because they think it's going to help their Krishna consciousness. They think it's going to help their sense gratification, right? Isn't it? I'm just in love. Why are you getting married? Because I'm in love. Is that the only reason? Is there another reason? Isn't that the only reason? No, it goes a little deeper than that. You're a devotee. Did you forget? You're actually supposed to do things that are pleasing to Krishna. You're supposed to do things that help you advance in Krishna consciousness. Hello. Do you read Bhagavad Gita? We've talked about this before, how, our intelligence can get bewildered by lust. So in the same vein, why do you take a spiritual master? What is the essence of the relationship? It's the guidance you get. It's the connection, it's the inspiration to advance in Krishna consciousness. It's not because the way he blinks his eyes stimulates your chakras. Or that may be there. I don't want to minimize that. Okay, let me rephrase that. That if one is a pure devotee, one is very advanced, there'll be so many things that they do that will inspire you. And it could be the way they blink their eyes. Mm-hmm. Mr. Prabhupada said that. He said that like the spiritual master is so, there's so much Krishna consciousness that when he smiles, he could make people Krishna conscious by a smile because his smile represents Krishna. So I don't want to minimize that because it's true. You may see someone lead kirtan and just go, and you might say, his kirtan touched my heart. The way he chanted touched my heart. And I just felt such a connection with him that I wanted to be with him and I wanted to serve him. That may be totally, totally bona fide. I don't want to minimize that. But if it's, the way he sings, it's so beautiful. But you have no real desire to be instructed by that person or have no real faith in the examples they set and so forth, then that's not really what it means to have a spiritual master. It's really based on faith that I can follow what he says. It's I have faith in what he says. It's touching me in a way that is inspiring me. That's what it means to be a disciple. Now, having said that, you can say now you have different degrees of disciples, because let's say you're inspired by somebody, but not to that level where you can fully surrender. And I think this is an important point, because everything I've said up to this point would make it sound like, okay, it's absolute faith, it's absolute trust, it's a deep relationship of love and so on. And that's all true. But now let's look at it from another point in which somebody may inspire you, but it's not to that level where you can accept everything they say. Can that person be your Siksha Guru? And yes, because the relationship is evolving. You have trust in them. You like them. You're inspired by them. You're not ready to completely, fully surrender. You don't chant 16 rounds. There may be things that you say that they say that don't completely align with you and where you're at. Okay. So the point is that I made this point before, but this is not, it's not, I don't know if it's so commonly taught in ISKCON, but it's just my particular feeling that everyone who wants to be Krishna conscious should accept the shelter of a Siksha Guru. Of course, everyone should accept Prabhupada's shelter as their Siksha Guru, but also accept a living Siksha Guru, because the living Siksha Guru, as it is said, can pull you by the ear, where the book may not pull you by the ear, where the living Guru can just say, come. Come out of this nonsense. Give you a little slap. So it's just my personal observation that I feel people do better, will do better in Krishna consciousness if they have a Siksha Guru, they accept someone more formally. Will you be my Siksha Guru? I want to take guidance from you. And see them as your guru, because that way that person can help you come to the point of following all the principles, chanting 16 rounds, and preparing yourself, if it is your desire to do that, and if it is your desire to someday take initiation, he can help you prepare for that. And if it's not your desire, at least you're getting guidance from someone that you have some trust and faith in. So the idea here is, before you're completely ready either to chant 16 rounds or follow the regular principles, or ready to completely accept this person, or have absolute faith and trust in this person, but still you have sufficient faith and you have sufficient Krishna consciousness to have some kind of sadhana and practice and trust in Krishna's words and Prabhupada's words, that you feel that you would benefit from the guidance of this person rather than to have no connection on a deep level, then you should ask that person, will you be my Siksha Guru? And then, in that way, Everyone in the Krishna conscious movement can be guided, can feel that connection. Because the Shastra is saying, take shelter of a guru. So, you know, how do you take shelter if you're not ready for diksha? So we should always take shelter of guru. And then when we're ready for diksha, diksha is another topic, you know. See, I think everybody puts the topic of taking shelter with guru and diksha as one thing. But I believe we should accept it as two things, because they are two things. One is the siksha and one is the diksha. And the siksha you get from many people. And if you only think guru is diksha, then you won't find a siksha guru other than your diksha guru. Or if you're not ready for diksha, you won't find a siksha guru because you're not ready. So I think that's, I mean, in a sense, it seems quite common sense. But somehow or other in ISKCON we've merged the siksha and the diksha to such a point that even some people who take diksha don't realize that the essence is the siksha, not the diksha. And when you think the essence is the diksha, then you get yourself in trouble because you've misunderstood, just like we're saying in a marriage, you think the essence is just romance. Okay, it's an important part, but it's not the essence. The essence is your commitment. The essence is your service to one another. The essence for us as devotees is, will this marriage help you become Krishna conscious? That's what's important. And whenever we don't understand the essence, then our expectations are false, and then we get let down. So I'm sure there are many people who have the wrong expectation about a spiritual master, and then the spiritual master may let them down, although he hasn't done anything wrong. So the essence is to be guided by the instructions. And also, the dynamics within ISKCON is that you get instructions from so many people, and you get instructions from Srila Prabhupada. That's we're studying his books. So it's not just that you're only getting instructions from your spiritual master. You have so many uncles and you have your grandfather. So it's very synergistic. So it's, you know, it's in my guru is everything, but at the same time there's so many other people who are very important in your spiritual life. So that also neutralizes to some degree the what we might think the primary or essential importance of diksha, because the essence of diksha is siksha. The essence of guru disciple is siksha. If let's say for example I wasn't initiating, right? And you heard from me and you said, you know, I really feel connected to you because I really relate to what you're teaching and I'd really like to have you as my guru. And I say, I'm not initiating. And you say, oh, please, won't you initiate? And I said, no, I decided I won't. You'll have to find someone to take initiation. So then you'll think, well, I like so-and-so, so I'll ask them for initiation. But your real connection is with me. So the initiation is necessary, and you tell that spiritual master, I'm really, you know, my real connection is Mahatma, but he doesn't want to initiate, so I appreciate you as a Vaishnava, and I'm inspired by you. Will you initiate me? So he initiates you, but your real connection is with me, because the real connection is siksha. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's not common in ISKCON, but there's nothing wrong with that, because the essence is the instruction. And that also happens after initiation, that you take initiation because you have deep faith in someone. But later on, you gain deep faith in another person, which could even exceed the inspiration you're getting from your initiating spiritual master or equal it. And you become deeply connected with that person on the basis of the siksha and the relationship. And that is so normal and natural that to deny it is a heresy, in my opinion. It's a travesty. It's wrong. It's really bad. We should never ever get in the way of any relationship that someone has with a bona fide devotee that's helping them in their Krishna consciousness. Every relationship can help you. So if we understand the essence of diksha, the essence of guru-disciple relationship as siksha, as disciple means to be disciplined, and the discipline comes, of course, from the instructions, then once we understand the essence, then we won't have any confusion. And one of the reasons that I'm talking about this to you, I mean, most of you are saying, yeah, well, you know, everything, my spiritual life, everything's good, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the reasons I'm explaining this to you, it's good that you have this information, but especially for other people that you're going to be helping, who may say, well, I really want to accept so-and-so as my guru, and say, well, do you know, what does that mean? What does a guru mean to you? Do you understand? And then you help them try to understand. Yes? So, at least, I'm assuming you understood most of this anyway. But if you didn't, then it was good we talked about it. But more so, I was just thinking in your discussions with other devotees that you would be able to help them by understanding this. Now I'm going to read what Alaksha says. And I want to also remind myself that we want to discuss the second aspect of situations which put pressure on people to accept diksha from a specific person. So Alaksha says, thank you, Guru Dev. Some days ago I was thinking about my mother. She's 72 years old. She has been chanting 16 rounds since 3 years ago. She is always reading Prabhupada's books, offering food, preaching to our neighbors. She doesn't go to the temple and doesn't know any guru. I would like she could have the opportunity to find her spiritual master. I was talking with her. She's not really convinced about initiation. Well, I would not, like I'm saying from this lecture, I don't think when we talk about guru to people, we should talk about initiation, but we should talk about guidance and essence. Because from that, if they accept that person and the guidance and the relationship, and it's the right combination between guru and disciple, then the relationship will naturally develop, they'll get inspired, and then at that point they'll want to connect formally. But as I'm saying before, if you talk about initiation, but there's no format, there's nothing to formalize, it's kind of like talking about marriage, but there's nobody to marry. Okay, you know, theoretically, yeah. Okay, I know I should get married, it'll be good for me. But there's nobody to marry. So if I keep pressuring you to get married, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, I know, stop pressuring me. You know, I don't have any, I'll find somebody. But, you know, get off my case, will you? You know, give me time, you know. So it's the same way. That's why we should emphasize the idea of take guidance from someone, develop a relationship, be inspired by them. It will help you in your spiritual life. This is what our Shastra says. We should have the shelter of a spiritual master. Yes? And so if you just emphasize that, then let everything else come from that. But we, you know, you think that's funny, but we do the same thing with, you know, why don't you take initiation? You should take initiation. Yeah, but I'm not ready yet. No. And then we go, you should marry this guy, he's really good. Stop telling me who to marry, I'll marry who I want. No, this guy, he's good, you'd like him. I don't like him, I know who he is. No, but he's good, you know, you should really, you know, I mean, you know, there's so many girls that he could marry, but, you know, I think he'd marry him. Get off my case, you know, I don't want to marry the guy. I don't like him, okay? Is that all right? Finish. I don't want to talk about it anymore, all right? You make me agitated. Don't talk about it. So, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with guru, although we may not express it that way. You know, I think you should take from this one. He's really good. You really like it. You know, so, okay, so this is segueing into that discussion. In our Shastra, it says you should find a spiritual master and take shelter of him. And then it says, Alaksha says, I'm completely right. Oh, my ego feels so good now. I love to feel completely right. You don't know how good that makes me feel. The only problem is that I think everything that comes out of my mouth is completely right, and that means everyone else is completely wrong. And that means I think I'm God. All right, I'm Krishna conscious, so I just think I'm a little God, not a big one. So There's two interesting things in our shastra, which are a little. I want to balance it. No, you don't have to be sorry, Laksha. Laksha, you are right. Everything I say is completely right. At least everything I said in the last hour was completely right, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, it is said that when you speak from shastra, then everything you say is completely right, because shastra is completely right. When you try to predict the future, you may not be completely right, unless you're Trikalagya. So we've discussed this principle before, that in the shastra it says, you find a spiritual master. Okay, so how do you find a spiritual master? Well, first thing is, you have to know qualifications, you know what a guru is, what his function is. A lot of what we discussed here, plus more, you know, the qualifications is, you know, basically, one who knows Krishna and follows Krishna and can give Krishna, or one who knows Prabhupada, more specifically, can follows him and gives Prabhupada. At least within ISKCON, that's our criteria. And then, Shastra says, different Shastras say, you should live with a spiritual master for a year, and to, number one, determine that he is bona fide, but more importantly, to determine, and this is relevant, more relevant to ISKCON, to determine that you and he are the right match. Because, as I've said before, if you're choosing a guru at ISKCON, you're not really choosing from a list of possible bona fide and possible not bona fide. You're choosing from a list of already bona fide, right? And then you're really trying to determine, is this person, are we on the same wavelength as, you know, this may sound mundane, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses the word compatible. So are we compatible? So I think it's important, you know, to not go and say, well, if he's bona fide, I should just accept him, because something must be wrong with me if I don't, because he's bona fide. But is this the person you can dedicate your life to? Do his instructions, you know, really resonate with you on a deep level? Do you feel that by following those instructions, that you're really progressing, maturing in devotional service in a really special and powerful way? So there's a compatibility issue here, right? And so from this perspective, Shastra is saying, it's up to you to decide on this relationship. It's not an arranged marriage. Back to the marriage example. So, you know, in the arranged marriage example, your parents said, you know, we found a boy, I think it would be good. We found a girl, I think it would be good. And in spiritual circles, that's not really supposed to happen. Well, I'm your six-year guru. Okay, I don't initiate. But I found somebody, and I think you should take initiation from him. That sometimes happens, but generally, that's not the way Shastra says it should happen. It should come from you. So arranged initiations are not our philosophy. Arranged marriages, okay. But arranged initiations, not really. Now, occasionally in Shastra, you will find a Siksha guru who will say, go take shelter of this person, take Diksha. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur told Bhaktisiddhanta, I don't give you initiation. Although I understand he gave him Harinam initiation, but he didn't give him second initiation. As his father, he didn't give it. And he said, you go to Gaurakishordas Babaji. So he told him where to go. So, but he was already his guru. So because, like let's say, I'm a Siksha guru, I'm not a Diksha guru, and you become a new devotee, and I'm the one from day one that you take guidance from, and I know you inside and out, and you're saying, you know, there's several gurus I'm thinking of taking initiation from. Can I discuss it with you? And then, you know, okay, let's discuss it. Then I might ask you questions about your faith, your attachment, and I might just help you go through the process that you should really have gone through on your own in your mind, but you didn't know how to go through it, right? Or you may come to me and say, you know I should accept initiation from someone, but I haven't really thought of anyone, and you know me really well. Is there anyone you could suggest? So in that sense, that might happen. You say, well, I think, you know, I know so-and-so, and you and he seem to be on the same wavelength. I think you'd be really inspired by him. So why don't you hear from him? And so then you go hear from him, and you say, yes, I think you're right, or say, I've heard from him, but not that inspired. You know, so, okay, let's talk about it. So you're still ultimately helping them make their own decision. You may give them some guidance because they're asking for it, but you ultimately, you take diksha from this person, from the person that you feel is the person that you can surrender to. You can give your heart to the person that whose instructions you can follow. Now, in some cases, like Alaksha saying here, let's go to this. Or Gurunishas. My mother never wanted any guru other than Prabhupada. But yes, she constantly felt the need for a Siksha Guru or someone to help her clarify many things when she read the Bhagavatam. Okay, so let's say in this situation, this actually happened with me, with Greg, who I named Ganapati, and I think actually left his body because he was quite ill and he's not responded to any Facebook messages or emails in like the last year. And he said he came to ISKCON, you know, in like the late 60s, early 70s. Or he didn't come, but he was around it. And, you know, he became serious in his older age. And he said, you know, I feel Prabhupada. He was attracted to me and he felt a connection with me. And he said, but I really feel Prabhupada's my guru. So I said, well, I'll just initiate you on behalf of Prabhupada and he'll be your guru. And anything I can help you to do to connect with Prabhupada, I'll do. And I don't want to get in the way. So he was happy with that. So that means if he would have gotten initiated by me, then the main relationship would have been with Prabhupada. And that I formalized the diksha because he needed to formally get diksha. So I'm formally his diksha guru. But his main siksha was coming from Prabhupada. That's what he wanted. That's what he needed. So, you know, he was happy with that. I was happy with that. So the same situation with your mother, and said, you know, you should say, find a guru. I said, you need, you know, Shastra says you need to be formally initiated. But if you're attached to Srila Prabhupada more so than anyone else, you don't feel that deep connection with anyone else, then you discuss that with your guru, and then you see that, you know, you tell him that and see that he will initiate you and you remain connected to Prabhupada. That's where your main source of connection is. And then your relationship with him is more like he formally initiated you. But from the level of siksha, he understands that you're getting your siksha from Prabhupada or other devotees who are talking about Prabhupada. Something like that. So that's how, you know, guru-disciple relationship can be individual, depending on the situation. So Guru Nishtha, are you talking about your mother, or are you channeling from Mayapur TV somebody else's statement? Because I didn't know your mother was connected to Prabhupada. Because it sounds like Guru Nishtha, what you're saying sounds like an extension of what Alaksha is saying about her mother. Oh, my mother. Oh, so we have two mothers. Two mothers in the same position. Yeah, so that's what I would tell them. I would say, you know, you need to be formally initiated, but if you don't have that kind of deep faith in anyone other than Prabhupada, then as long as you're Diksha Guru understands that he's initiating you, kind of, you know, we don't want to say Ritvik, but as long as you understand this person who's initiating you is your Diksha Guru, Prabhupada's not your Diksha Guru, but your Prabhupada is your main guru, and your Diksha Guru totally understands and accepts that, and is not trying to get in the way of that relationship, and you seek his help as needed and required, then Prabhupada's your main guru, and he understands that everything's good, then do it. Everything's fine. Another thing which is interesting is that many devotees, when they've been in Krishna consciousness for many, many years, especially devotees who came, like in the early 80s, for example. They came right after Prabhupada left, and Prabhupada's presence was so strongly felt in ISKCON still. But those people, I mean, ISKCON after Prabhupada left was still very Prabhupada-centered for many years. It started to deviate, but right after Prabhupada left, it was almost like being in ISKCON was like Prabhupada was still here. So people who grew up at that time in ISKCON were very Prabhupada-centered, and now, you know, they've been devotees 35 years or so, they're in their 50s, maybe even 60s. Their connection with Prabhupada is much like what I just described. It's their main connection. And, of course, they respect their spiritual master deeply and so forth. But their service also may be, in general, to ISKCON, nothing specifically to their spiritual master. In general to ISKCON, and their main siksha will be coming from Prabhupada's books and the various disciples of Prabhupada that they hear, or anyone that they hear, giving class and so forth. So that is a destination many devotees, you could say, yeah, many devotees come to, just in their, you know, and it's also a logistical thing. Let's say, you know, you took initiation in Australia, and because your guru spent a lot of time there, and you were very close. And then your guru took up another service, and he hardly comes to Australia. And when he does, he comes to one place, then you don't live in that place, and you're working now, and you can't always get free. And just so, naturally, you know, the hearing that you're getting, and it just, and, you know, he's not connected with you as he used to be. And by this time you've read all of Prabhupada's books once or twice. You're really understanding well Prabhupada's position as founder Acharya. And you're getting very, very attached to Prabhupada. So it doesn't mean like your relationship is being minimized with your Diksha Guru. But it's kind of like, you know, how dependent you are when you're a kid on your parents, but then you grow up and you get married. You're still dependent on them, but it's different. It's like, you know, it's not every day. It's like once in a while you call them and say, I'm in this situation, what should I do? Or I need some money, can you help? You're still dependent on them, but you're an adult. You know, you have a baby, you call your mother, can you come help? You know, there's that relationship. But as you're maturing and becoming stronger, the relationship changes. I'm not saying it has to or it necessarily will, but often it does naturally, just because you've gotten older, your service together has increased in different directions, and your relationship could actually simultaneously become deeper, but deeper on a different level, where your service together has, you know, you have 30 years of service behind you together. And it's just like it's so much deeper, but at the present time you may not be working so closely together because you're both working on different projects, different countries, different times. So everything can evolve. Or you got married and now you have, you know, you gave birth to quadruplets, so you're pretty busy, and you know, you can't come online for classes, you have no time to write emails, you know, you're just like, your life is like quadruplized. So, you know, so circumstantially things change. And now, you know, your whole life centers around your children, your husband, just trying to keep your life together. So your connection with your spiritual master, it's on a very deep level, but practically, externally, it's not the way it used to be. And so, you know, these are just real life factors that can affect. I'm not saying that it will necessarily happen this way. And I'm not saying that's bad if it does happen this way. It's just, we're all evolving. And I think some disciples will evolve closer. Some will evolve into their own, you know, some will start their own temples somewhere and who knows where and being very involved in the temple. And be taking a lot of guidance from their guru and become even more close to him now that they're running a temple. For others, it could be the other way, that they're running the temple and they don't, you know, they're really busy and they're really inspired. Everything's going great, and they're not having so much time to connect with their guru the way they used to. But the relationship is so deep anyway, so it doesn't have to always be externalized in the way it was earlier. Because now you have, you know, so many years of connection. So, that's what I wanted to say. And I've said it. And now everything I said is finished. And so, I am going to end class here, and I'll just wait a moment. If you have anything else to say, or if you have any questions to ask, and it takes 20 seconds from the time I say this for you to hear, and it takes another 20 seconds for you to start thinking, it takes another 20 seconds for your brain to start working, and then another 20 seconds for the question to come up. So that's 1 minute, 20 seconds. And I have to sit here and talk for 1 minute and 20 seconds while I'm waiting for your brains to kick in with questions and the internet to kick in 20 seconds behind, right? I'm still waiting for you to hear this. And I'm still waiting. I feel like a radio show host who puts a question out there and doesn't get any calls. And while he's waiting for the calls, he just starts talking and saying exactly the same thing he just said for like the last 10 minutes. And he said it about 40 times because he's got nothing else to say. And he's trying to get people excited. Okay, so does this mean that I've answered all your questions, even the ones you didn't know you had? And you have no other questions to ask. If this is what it means, then we will end class here. And as far as I can tell, I'll be able to give classes regularly here now that I'm back in Mayapur. Yes. Always be guided. For everyone, you know. Anyone you're preaching to, you know, not right away, but at a certain point when they're ready, you can suggest, you know, it would really be good if you connect with some senior devotee. Doesn't have to be his official guru, but, you know, either way, just, you know, someone who can give them some shelter and guidance on a regular basis. It's very, very helpful. Okay, so I'm going to sign off. And we'll see you Saturday. Yes, I answer the questions that you don't even know you have. It's my special Shakti, right? Okay. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.